customers like to see absolutely perfect fruit when they get to the produce section at the grocery store. And if there's any discoloration or browning, millions and pounds of food gets thrown out and wasted. So that's their thinking. I don't agree with this, but that's their modus operandi with creating this biotech food. And it has been approved by the USDA. The company, Neil Carter for the company, is very, very excited. He called it a monumental occasion. His apples will be available in 2016 in small quantities in the United States. And just to go over and sort of rehash the reason why we have such an issue with genetically modified organisms in our food. In 2014, there was a study that was released pointing out that the advent of genetically modified organisms dominating the global food system threatens the production of traditionally grown crops and leaves only genetically modified crops to feed as a viable crop to feed the human population. And I'm talking on a global scale. That means...
Looks like we've got... Oh, sorry. Oh, go ahead and finish your thought, but it looks like we've got Vinny on.
Yeah, let's bring Vinny on. Absolutely.
Hey, Vinny.
I'm right here, man.
Why don't you respond to what Suzanne was saying?
About, you know, bruised apples and stuff the last 30 seconds or stuff that I heard. Well, you know, it just seems to go in with the general theme that people like what they're looking at and don't care what's in it, what substance it has, etc. Kind of like the elections.
Absolutely. If the guy looks good and he's got a good tie on and a nice clean haircut, let's vote for him.
But I still don't understand how George H.W. Bush won in the late 80s. It just doesn't understand. He's just an ugly man. But when it comes to food, on the other hand, I have noticed this phenomenon indeed when you're going around. In fact, it's quite funny because we'll go and we'll buy a whole bunch of apples and my wife will give me one or two of them and I'll be like, there are bruises all over this puppy. I wish that wasn't the case. But the thing is, what you're willing to sacrifice is goodness knows what kind of reactions, right? I'm eating an apple. It's a normal apple. Seems about right. However, if you're eating an apple and it ain't a normal apple, you don't know what it's going to do, what its side effects will be, what kind of genetic material are in it, or goodness knows what else. Are there any, like, dangers posed by these Franken apples?
Absolutely. And the scientist that I was talking about in 2014, right before you came on, from the International Center of Tropical Agriculture, released a study that shows that because we have these homogenized global diet consisting mostly of staple crops like wheat and rice and soy, which are genetically modified, we're noticing non-communicable diseases spreading more readily across the globe when we look at the entire population. And this is a huge health risk to the population. And not only that, but the takeover of the genetic crops over the viability of traditional agriculture means that the biotech industry is sort of moving in and able to take over areas because the soil and the environment are not able to hold traditional crop agricultural practices once it's been used over time for biotech purposes.
Okay, so I don't quite understand exactly how it works. They're pretty much just like, okay, let's not throw out the food, let's make it deadly and so that people will buy it.
They're saying that the genetically modified organisms growing these crops is a problem, not only to a health risk to people eating them on a global scale, but also to our agricultural system, and we'll have to use other practices, thereby necessitating more of the biotech industry involved in our agriculture, because we won't be able to grow crops traditionally.
So it just keeps getting worse, basically. And what was it? Somebody is telling me about the importance of having, quote, seasonal fruits and vegetables. If you're having all sorts of different fruits and vegetables and everything shipped on from all over the world, I mean, look, Suzanne, the other day I went outside and I ate one of our strawberries off the vine. You know what's real strange about that? It actually tasted like an effing strawberry. We bought punnets and things of that nature from mass producers over the summer. No flavor in them whatsoever of any kind. And I was just thinking to myself, what kind of nutritional value is in things that are mass-produced like that, that are kept in cold storage, that have no flavor or taste that you can really discern? They look legit, but they ain't legit.
Oh, absolutely. When you go to the farmer's market and you see, well, I worked on an organic farm for 5 years, and the even the size of the strawberry is completely different, and it's more sugary. It tastes better. It's sweeter. You don't have so much of the white middle or the off-color middle, which is what's happening is the outside where the fruit and the antioxidants are, the medicinal part of the fruit and then why you're eating it, is lessened in all of these genetically modified organism strawberries because they're grown too big and they don't have time to develop that outer shell that when you eat an organic strawberry, that's all there is.
So it's like the fruit version of pedophilia, basically.
Absolutely.
It's quite nasty. You don't want your old strawberries in there mixing with the young. It's just wrong. In any way, speaking of something a little less risque, I was thinking just yesterday actually about how New Zealand has really lax drinking water standards, and I remember like Penny Bright, she was telling me like, let's say, for example, we're watering all of our fruits and vegetables with drinking water in general. That's a fair assumption, wouldn't you say? In New Zealand, drinking water standards were allowed triclifer, which is the active ingredient in Roundup. And we all know how wonderful Roundup is for you. And we're allowed 1,000 times more of it than they do under European drinking water standards. And she told a story of this guy who was watering his tomatoes, and his tomatoes started to deform a little bit. And apparently the tomatoes are like the canary in the coal mine as far as toxins in the water and soil supply are. So I'm kind of starting to wonder exactly, on top of just, you know, genetic modification being bad, is there a cumulative a bunch of bad things wrong with them, you know? Like, let's think about this from start to finish. First of all, you're planting a genetically modified seed. Not traditionally good. Then you're spraying it with herbicides and pesticides. Oh, they wash off. Yeah, but they also get absorbed into the plant, and then you wind up eating it, bro. It kills bugs, but apparently it's okay for you. When was the last time you freshened your breath with a can of fly spray, bro? Did it work out for you, or did you get a little bit sick? On top
let
of that,
me point out here, wait, let me point out here that it kills the bugs by exploding their stomach. So if you get a stomach ache, just think about that. If you were a bug, your stomach might have exploded.
Yeah, you poor little insecticide consumer, you. So the water that we're doing onto it has, even in the United States, is much, much worse than here, where you've actually got, what, 1 in 4 people on some kind of medication, and that's all going into the drink, all into the sewage supply, and some of that gets recycled out and gets back into the water supply, and goodness knows what the heck else you're spraying your crops with. So that's like 3, 4, 5, 6 different forms of contamination before you've even grown the thing in order to eat it. Then on top of that, what are you using for harvesting? You know, it's just a pretty much a straight old big machine that will take everything out, or at the very best, you could expect a whole bunch of people picking them, usually before they're actually fully ripe and had the ability to develop. So the fruit's not as good as it would be, in the other hand, on top of the 5 other practices that make it worse for you anyway. And then on top of that, you got to freeze them or transport them or get into market or something of that nature. So you're taking this bad product, more or less, that is nutritionally deficient, containing heavy metals and other forms of contamination. And then you pop them on a shelf as everybody waltzes past, whether they've got, you know, Ebola or a common cold or whatever. All over them, and then you eat them. Usually with, I don't know, some kind of meal attached to it. Usually not a very healthy meal attached to it. You know? Oh, strawberries and highly manufactured ice cream that's got high fructose corn syrup in it. That sounds really good together. So the point I'm making here is nothing, almost, that is being grown in a modern practice, sold or transported or anything, like from start to finish, there's nothing good about the fruits and vegetables being grown in a lot of agriculture today. Wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. And having worked on an organic farm, I can tell you that problem you mentioned about picking the fruit too early, before it's gotten a chance to ripe. And by the way, folks, the most ripe fruit is the stuff that falls off the tree naturally. That's when it's got it's at its most peak, it's got its most nutrients and sugars in it, and it just naturally falls off. But even organic farms who go and sell their, you know, so-and-so by the pound to Whole Foods Market or Trader Joe's or places like that have this same problem where they pick the fruit too early, and it ripens while it's transporting, but it's not ripening the way that it should. And like you said, there is an element of devoid of the nutrients and the purpose, and even in the organic food. Like you're explaining with the transport, that is the major problem. The problem is that the food that we were growing in Colorado was going to California, Oregon, and Washington. So we had to pick the peaches and the apples and all that early and let them ripen as they moved along. But by the time it got to the consumer, it was not as good as it would have been if they just came to the farm and picked it themselves.
Well, let's think about this then. How can we revitalize the whole industrial agriculture thing? Who's the major owner of all these industrial agriculture chemical companies, etc.? Something tells me that they're not very nice men. Something tells me that they probably wouldn't want to let go of their enormous, powerful empires of disease in a hurry. So there must be a big barrier there, whether it be propaganda, lack of financing, or so on and so forth, that is indeed controlling the global food supply and indeed purposefully, in my opinion, making it worse for everybody to eat. I mean, maybe there's one day we're going to be so nutrient deficient as a human race that the common cold could kill you. And I think that's what's being brought up by Dr. Rima Labo and the Codex Alimentarius, is that billions of people, if once they ban vitamins and nutrients, more or less, and call them toxins, billions of people will die of starvation, and billions more will die of simple preventable diseases. Isn't that the game plan? Why is it that I can't look at anything that is going into my body or anything that's around me and assume that it's not about extermination this once?
Well, here's the problem, and I was talking about this on Angry Beaver Radio. I was just on their show last hour. Here's the problem. We have genetically modified organisms coming into this country. The USDA, we know that they're here, but the USDA is talking about this, and we want label it GMO, right? We want to label them. Well, the problem is that the biotech industry is writing the rules and regulations that they want the FDA to approve. So labeling it just means that the labeling will be under the rules and regulations that the biotech industry wrote. So we can see more genetically modified organisms, and we can see less transparency, because in their documents they state that it's a voluntary process whether the corporation producing produce, fruits and vegetables, or processed foods wants to divulge whether or not they use genetically modified organisms, and there's no law saying that they have to. It's voluntary. So do we want labeling? No, we want banning. We want to know what's in our food, because we're being told right now, especially in the United States, that we have to have vaccines because of this measles outbreak. And we have a question of the viability and the necessity of these ingredients and toxins in the vaccines. So why should we take it if it's not effectual? Why should we take it if the CDC admits that the flu mist, the nasal spray, is not effectual for children? Why should we take it if it has all of these additives that are toxic and of their own right, and yet they're all combined into this one giant shot that they want us to get 62 times before we're the age of 5. If they're not willing, yeah, exactly. If they're not willing to explain that why we have to be exposed to all of these toxins in our environment, in our community, just in life in general, then at some point our food supply becomes absolutely paramount, because that is where we're supposed to get. We're supposed to eat the natural broccoli, the fruits and vegetables, the actual meat, and gain the nutrients, vitamins, and the minerals that we need from that fruit. This all goes back to GMO. GMO needs to be banned, so that no matter what they inject in us, no matter what they expose in our environment, we're eating healthy food and we're able to combat it with a natural, healthy immune system.
Well, the claim is that vaccines virtually wiped out all the dangerous diseases, but the fact is that vaccines only started being used when all those diseases were already at the vanishing point, right? Now, to believe that vaccines were, like, solely responsible, you'd have to ignore every 20th and 21st century discovery that had any effect on the spread or severity of disease, including any and all advances in medicine, sanitation, diet, food preparation, packaging and transport, nutrition, technology, education, vitamins, soap, and disinfectants. No, that didn't have any effect. Only something containing live viruses, foreign and animal DNA mixed with heavy metals injected directly into the bloodstream are effective enough to combat disease.
Absolutely. So if we're eating good quality food, healthy food, we know the farmer. Here's the solution, folks. Go and find your farmer, get to know them, work this spring or this summer on their farm, get a CSA box, put your money not in your healthcare premiums, but into your local farmer. Don't forget Whole Foods Market, forget Trader Joe's, forget any corporation selling you natural anything. Go directly to the source, get it from them, and know that you're eating good, healthy food.
Well, I think that is probably an idea, but, you know, on top of that, it's not just the food that's contaminated, it's the air, it's the water, it's the, you know, I've got a contaminated everything. I think this is the profound realization that everybody needs to have. Okay, I'm going to go down to the shop, and I need to get a contaminated pineapple, I need a contaminated steak. Oh, some contaminated pork sausages. Oh, that would just be great. You know, just kind of get used to it. Or you can change it.
Change it by making sure that these small farmers do not go under. Give your money to them. Don't force them to pay exorbitant fees at the farmer's market. Go directly to them and pay for a CSA box and keep them in business. When you stop buying at the grocery store and start buying from your local farmer, the grocery stores are going to start freaking out because their shareholders and their stockholders are going to start bitching at them. You're going to start seeing stuff dropping on the stock market. That's a good sign. That means it's working. It won't take very long. It'd probably take about 3 to 6 months, I promise you. Then we start redirecting our and redistributing our wealth in other ways. We don't buy products from Nestle. We don't buy any products from Nestle. Read the labels. Go online and find out what their subsidiaries are and stop buying the products. They'll go under. Then who can crop up? A company that has ethics and morals. Companies, we can start up the companies. And then we can replace those companies. And then in a generation or two, things are going to be a hell of a lot different than they are today.
Yeah, including the assassination of almost every organic farmer in the continental US. Yeah, I mean, like, we're not dealing with a bunch of people who actually, you know, have a conscience or anything like that. We're basically let's just call a spade a spade. We're dealing with evil, psychopathic criminal scum. All right, they're dangerous, extremely so, and they won't go without a fight. So the thing is, we're going to have to give them one. All right, ladies and gentlemen out there, if you think that you don't have to fight for your life, fight for your food, fight for your freedom in some way, shape, or form, you're deluded. Because somebody's already declared war on all of these things. Somebody is already fighting. Somebody already has purchased their figurative tanks and bombs and guns. I mean, what do you think the FDA is going to approve for you? Hi, we're the Federal Food and Drug Administration. Oh, yeah? What do you do? Well, we approve drugs and foods. Oh, yeah? Who are all your directors and people on your boards? Former members of drug and food companies. Ah, okay. So are you you're going to be likely approving good foods and things like that, the drug and food companies that you used to work for and probably still have financial connections to? You're just going to, like, not favour them over other food and things of that nature? Ah, of course not. There's no such thing as a conflict of interest. This is America, son.
We can simply stop purchasing the products. It doesn't necessitate any aggression or violent action. It doesn't necessitate you join a group or become part of anything. You can do it tomorrow morning. Make a conscious decision that you're going to put your money in places where it does the most good for your community and your well-being. And by that, if a whole generation does that, and we've seen generations change massively the social consciousness. Look at what the 60s did. Change the social consciousness massively. We've seen massive changes with FDR and the junior citizens turning into the silent generation and starting the revolution for civil rights in the United States. It just takes a group of people who quietly do the right thing, and it spreads like a virus. I hate to say it that way, but it does. And it's infective, and other people will start to do it. And before you know it, by the time your grandchildren come around, you've got people in power as senators and congressmen and heads of corporations who think differently and want to do differently. And that is how you change the system. We've been talking about revolution for a long time, and it doesn't work because it's not going to work. But if we hit the corporations where they live, which is their pocketbook, it will work. And it doesn't mean that you have to go walking around wearing your ideology on your car or your clothing or hang a flag outside your door. It just means next time you go to the store, do your shopping consciously.
Yeah, read the stuff, you know. Like, a friend of mine, I remember this was years and years ago, we're coming up to a break here now in about 2 minutes, but he had a pantry full of food, and we were like, okay, what are we going to eat? And so we started going through it, and I started reading out all the labels, and I go, no, artificial sweeteners, no, artificial sweeteners, no, that one's got artificial flavor colors and all of this kind of stuff. And it's funny. You can go through somebody's entire pantry full of food from all different corporations and find the same crap in every single one of them. This leads me to believe that, well, basically, there's two types of food. Food you grow yourself and food that is grown for you. And the stuff that is grown and packaged and made for you is vastly inferior to anything you can grow yourself. I'm Vinny Eastwood from the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. I'm making a documentary, and we're getting a new computer sent in. It's $6,000. One of my listeners is fronting the money, but he can't afford to, like, just give it to me, so I'm going to have to pay him back at some point. So if the other listeners would be so kind as to follow his example and go to the VinnyEastwoodShow.com and make a substantial donation today, I'd really appreciate that. Other than that, I just got word that American Freedom Radio is going to be coming back as early as next week. So that's very, very exciting for all concerned.
Absolutely. We get our shows back.
Finally, it's been like 18 Yay! Months, man. I've been out here in the wilderness looking for positive news source, but I can't find one.
Absolutely.
Suzanne, how do we get a hold of your information?
OccupyCorporatism.com, and look for that. I will be putting on social media details as they come in. But yes, Vinny and I are returning to AFR, and it's going to be a spectacular. Please go there and listen.
Excellent. Okay, stick around, folks. We'll be right back for our UnitedWeStrike.com radio marathon roundtable. So that's who we are here at the roundtable, folks that bring you information. And I just played a song by a gentleman called Steve Voss. He writes patriotic and inspirational music, and I particularly like that song. It's called Renegade. And that'll be our focus tonight, at least to open up the discussion, renegades. Here we are, people on UnitedWeStrike.com, all of us sitting here at the table. We have this evening Suzanne Posel, who you just heard, along with Vinnie Eastwood all the way down there in New Zealand. We have Am Rosen here in the United States and in the on the West Coast, and Dr. Lorraine Hurley, who was on with us earlier, all the way there in the East Coast. I look at all of you, and I see renegades, people, as Steve Voss describes in his song, who were not afraid to question authority, to take action in their life, because without people willing to step out of the box and be leaders, revolutions don't happen. And we're at the UnitedWeStrike.com marathon. Our objective is to unite people in unity around the world in noncompliance, peaceful noncompliance against the New World Order. And you know, it takes a special person to step outside of their comfort zone and start talking to a worldwide audience about these issues that concern us and wanting to help others to be able to understand what's going on in our world. We'll be able to add Sky Cubby here in a moment. But so we'll take that topic. But before we go to that topic and explore that, and I want to get to it a little more, we've got let's go around the table and give a brief introduction of who you are and let us know how you came to the United We Strike roundtable today, or how you became involved, briefly. Let's start with Suzanne Posel.
Thank you. I'm Suzanne Posel, chief editor of OccupyCorporatism.com. I am blessed to have known Karen Quinn Tostado for a long time now. It's been several years, but she is one of the most incredible, caring people. And when she invited me to come on United We Strike and go on with Vinny, I was ecstatic and honored. And I cannot imagine my month going by with the second Saturday not coming and even enjoying on the roundtable. I love everything about this. I love everything that she's done. And I am honored to be part of this.
Well, thank you. We're honored that you take the time to spend with us. Your intelligence and insightfulness is always educating. Vinnie Eastwood, please, a brief introduction and how you became involved.
Well, I'm the first New Zealander to have an American-based talk radio show, and I interviewed Karen on my show this one time and was invited to join the marathon. And it's been pretty awesome these last couple of years because I had suspected at the time that it might, I don't know, like waver and fall like so many marathons and so many upstart radio networks do. But it's not. It's only growing and remaining strong, namely because a lot of the people that are running it are dedicated to it for the right reasons. They're not here because they're being paid to do it. They're not here because they're being told to do it. They're being here because they were asked, and they have an obligation, something deep inside that keeps this machine running. And I want to acknowledge everybody who is actually at the helm of that machine, because sometimes I'm so busy, I forget what day United We Strike is on, like today, for example. I turned up pretty late. And it was only because Suzanne, who's... let me say she's a lot less flaky than me. She tagged me in a Facebook post. You know, the first thing that you do when you live on Facebook is you get up in the morning and you go, a Facebook post. I'm on United We Strike. Open that Skype. And here I am.
All right. Well, we appreciate your participation. You know, Karen was the impetus for a lot of this. I really admire her for the effort that she did put into all of this. For without her energy, we wouldn't continue to be UnitedWeStrike.com. And yes, we do have a great core of individuals supporting us, and that's always appreciated. One long-term core person, Am Rosen, why don't you give our audience a brief introduction and how you became involved?
Thank you. Hi, everybody. Yes, my name is Am Rosen. How I became involved? Well, my friend Dean Lloyd, Dr. Lloyd, was talking with Karen. He got on the show with her and then suggested that we should do come on the show together. Karen liked what she heard and recommended us. At that time, it was Wolf Spirit Radio. And later that transposed or escalated into the United We Strike Marathon, which I'm extremely grateful for because one thing I love intelligence. I love a chance to collaborate and share ideas. And I think this is very timely and very much in need of what has to come about right now. So that's kind of how I got involved with all this.
Excellent. Always a pleasure to have you. Now, Dr. Lorraine Hurley, you were involved with us very early on as a guest and co-host at times. You've not made an appearance here at UnitedWeStrike.com for a very long time. You've got a very successful show on the GCN radio network. Please introduce yourself and tell us how you became involved.
Well, hi, Matt. Thank you. And, I'm not even sure, you know, how I got involved and the reason I haven't been on. Oh, God. Talk about... I got involved through geoengineering. Dane Wigington, I think, introduced me to you, Matt, several other people, Karen Testato. Karen and I still communicate. I've been a pretty, I would call it arduous activist, and then just got the opportunity to do a radio show in which I began to explore all the other issues around geoengineering. I was here tonight as a guest of Dean and Am. These are colleagues of mine. I think we may have even actually met through United We Strike. I can't remember.
I think Dean met you first, and he brought me on board. Gratefully so.
Yeah, and we do something called Evolving the Species on GCN. You know, boy, Matt, I just everyone's got such a succinct thing. I feel very, very privileged to actually be back here. I love hearing your voice. I'm remembering some of the earlier times. I think I dropped out because I got overwhelmed. I got what was called, people called doom fatigue. I got doom fatigue. I didn't stop learning. I didn't stop participating. I just could not keep up with everything. Feel a little bit more centered in myself these days. Feel a little bit more certain that even if we die, we win. If our hearts are in the right place.
I love that exactly. That term, doom fatigue. I've been feeling that a lot myself.
Benny, you were on my show. It was a while back, but it was when I had a producer. We had you on the show. You probably don't. You're on so many shows. You probably don't remember. We actually had you on the show.
Oh wow, that's amazing! Because I was just thinking.
It was comedy, Vinny. We got into what's the comic response, and you were the man for that.
Yeah.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time, Dr. Hurley, to join us. You know, we do miss you, and yes, you and I did a bunch of interviews that really helped educate, I guess, in my mind, a lot of ways to stay healthy, because what I focus on my show a lot is about health, because that is how we win against New World Order. If they cannot keep us in their pharmaceutical hospitalized prisons, then they cannot control us. And I think that's how we win, staying healthy. Speaking of staying healthy, our next roundtable guest host is Sky Cubby from MedicinalFoods.com. He is focused all about staying healthy. Good evening, Sky. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Aloha from the Big Island of Hawaii. And I am I'm CEO and Director of Wellness for Medicinal Foods. I was invited on the show. I was a guest of Matt's, actually, about my book, The Raw Chocolate Diet, How to Eat Healthy and cleanse Every Organ, and all kinds of healthy living tips and guidelines we went through there. But then I interviewed Keith Mahler, who is the creator of the Nano Silver, the new silver solutions that Dr. Rima works with. And that was exciting to get that information out. I do feel like that will save millions of lives, since we have people dying of...
weaponized Ebola?
the MRSA staff, and yeah, well, you know, it's something we test out here in Hawaii, that the none of the silver seems to really work, but that nano silver would knock out the MRSA staff when people would get it out here in Hawaii. But I was born in to some hippies that owned a summer camp in Northern California called Earth Camp One, and they did organic gardening and backpacking up Mount Shasta, and they were pioneers. You know, they were some of the first people who did granola and crazy stuff like tofu, and I think it was a pretty pioneering community that I was born into. People like Tim Leary and Ram Dass and other stars like Joni Mitchell's children went there. And so my parents ran this summer camp, and my dad ended up dying of ended up getting diagnosed with cancer and sold the camp. And so that kind of led me on this path of health and wellness, since I had asthma and lung infections and had my own chronic ailments to figure out. And I did everything from Ayurvedic to Chinese medicine to raw foods, and just kind of did it all until I came into balance and created medicinal foods to share that with the world. But I'm out here on 6 acres of hundreds of fruit trees, durian, longan, lychee, and we're just living that life that my parents, who came in the darkest time in the 50s, passed on to me. So we're just keeping it real out here and trying to live close to the earth and share with our community. Locally, we do cacao ceremonies, and then as far as getting information out and these products to help people be healthy and kind of, yeah, rebel in the strong, in the most powerful way we can with our choices in what we are buying in the products and the information that we can get out as far as how to keep ourselves healthy. That's probably one of the strongest ways we can rebel, I think.
Right. Well, you know, that goes back right to the point I wanted to get to tonight. That is about being a renegade, somebody who steps outside the social, cultural norms in order to do something that they consider morally right. You may not agree with that, but that is the motivation of the renegade. You take the mindset of the Revolutionary War, of the Founding Fathers. They're saying, look, we know what tyranny looks like. We don't like it, and so we're going to form our own government, and we're willing to die to defend this idea that everyone is born free and that they can worship any god they want and they can protect themselves against a tyrannical government, and that the government is instituted to protect them. These renegades gave us what we thought is the United States. We've lost it. We've lost it now, and it's not entirely gone. But unless we act now as renegades, then we have no chance. We have no future, because their idea is to exterminate 80 to 90% of the world's population. So I look at all of you, and you're renegades. You all have your own means of radio talk shows and means of communicating with the greater public. You're the ones willing to step outside the box and say, hey, this isn't right. This is why I think it's not right. Go do your homework. All of you are like that. So what I'd like to do is, from all of you here tonight, is hear your point of view of why you are a renegade and why you do what you do. Like Dr. Hurley was saying, is, you know, if I die tonight, I can die knowing I did what I could, and I can sleep well at night knowing I have no regrets. I've done what is right. I would hope that people hearing our audience, hearing your stories, can help inspire them. You just enough inspiration to just go to the farmer's market instead of going to Costco. So let's go around the table with that idea, and then if we have time, open it up to another discussion. Suzanne Posel, what makes you a renegade?
I don't know. As I'm older now, I'm 37, and I guess I'm going through sort of like a midlife crisis. I don't know if it's early or late. I don't know, but I'm acutely aware that the first 30 years of my life are gone, and I'm closer to the end than I am to the beginning. And what I do and my legacy means so much more to me. I've become very serious about facts and evidence because I know that in history, when we have stopped things from happening, it's when we had the actual facts and evidence to back up our assertions, when we were able to societally or governmentally or otherwise stop corruption. Think about the implementation of Glass-Steagall. For 50 years, we had no banking mishaps, and then they repeal Glass-Steagall, and we have mishap after mishap, and then bam, the crash in 2008. I understand as I grow older the effect of the programming that happens in early childhood and how we act out that programming throughout our lives. And through my children, I am acutely aware of what they are exposed to, and I don't shelter them from exposure. I stand next to them and explain if something is amiss, what that exposure is, and allow them both sides of the argument to make their own decision. I don't want them to blindly follow me because that's antithetical to what I do for a living. And I don't get paid to do this. I love doing this. I've done this for 5 years. It's the best job I've ever had. It's the most fulfilling job I've ever had. Being able to have the product, the Crystal Pure CBD, I get emails and letters and I speak to the customers, and it's amazing to me to hear the stories and know that it's working and it works. And so people are happier. And I know that what I'm doing today and 20 years from now is going to have had an impact. So I am acutely aware that I was a fan of George Carlin and Bill Hicks. And I read voraciously as a child. And those influences, the music I listened to, the movies I gravitated toward, they all sort of speak to what I do today, which is corruption at any level. I don't care if it's my next door neighbor. I don't care if it's the guy halfway across the world. If I find out about it and I have the evidence to prove it, I'm going to expose you. Because corruption on any level is some of the main constituent problems of what we're facing and why we're facing it. And it's a generational systemic problem. If we could take care of that in a matter of two generations, my grandchildren or my great-grandchildren would live in a completely different world if we just changed our ideologies today. And so that is what I'm trying to do. Does that make me a renegade? I don't know. But I want my life to mean something. And when I get emails and speak to my readers and my listeners, and I speak to the people who buy the Crystal Pure CBD, I know that I'm having an effect on these individuals who then branch out and have effects on other individuals. And I'm just glad to be part of that branch and that tree.
Indeed. I think that's a whole idea. It's a good analogy to be branches and trees. I like to use the analogy of planting seeds. You plant seeds in people's minds, people's hearts, people's spirits, and then someday down the road, something may trigger that seed to germinate and to blossom, perhaps. And that, and they could be the next Suzanne Posel or the next Vinnie Eastwood. Speaking of Vinnie Eastwood, you down there caused a lot of headaches for local politicians and media types because of your exposure. You are a renegade. You do the things that are non-standard culturally to expose, as you call it, the scumbaggery. What motivates you as a renegade? What makes you a renegade, Vinny?
Well, I don't know about the rest of the people here, but I got teased all the way through school. I was never one of the popular kids, and when I was a young guy at university, just after I turned 19, I got arrested for selling weed. And at the time, I was quite naive. I thought, okay, cops are there to help you, so you know, tell them absolutely the truth and everything, and then they take your full confession and then manufacture evidence. based upon that information and inflate it to something that's completely untrue. So it was a pretty rude awakening for me. But because of my experience throughout my entire life being hassled and having to basically be on the outside most of the time, it was sort of almost fitting for me to have these kind of things happen. And I think the reason why I became an activist more specifically than that wasn't just the fact that I was traumatized. I mean, I was effed off. I'd been listening to comedians and things of that nature, and the things that they were saying were very true, and they were very dark, but they were also freaking hilarious. So after years and years of trying, like, I actually attempted to go back to what a normal person would do with their life after they go through that. I went into the workforce, I went back to university, and only a few years after that, it was all for naught. The university wasn't teaching me anything. Not to this day, I haven't used in conversation or in any type of practical situation a single thing that I was ever taught at university at all, ever, not once. And it's almost exactly the same with my high school career. So I figured out something very early on in life, at about the age of 24, that I am smarter than the people who are trying to teach me how to think. And that poses its own great problem. The first problem is arrogance and being too full of yourself. And the second problem is, who do I go to teach me, to mentor me, if the people that I'm currently paying to do it are dumber than me and aren't teaching me squat? And I saw this magazine called Uncensored on the rack at a supermarket, edited by Jonathan Eisen, who wrote a book called The Suppressed Inventions and Other Discoveries. And I went to go meet John Eisen. He has his phone number in the magazine. I called him up and I went out to have a chat with him. And we've basically been friends ever since. It was because of the fact that I started reaching out for mentors and started losing all my friends that were dumber, less ethical, less talented than I, that I filled up my social scene with people who were more skilled, more intelligent, more empathic, more experienced. And as a result, at least 90% of my friends are nearly twice my age. And it seems to me that this is what my real purpose really became, is being part of the elder renegades sort of fight by doing the things that they can't do for themselves. They don't sit there and at a computer all day editing videos and audio files together and things of that nature. They can't and they won't. So I was just like, right, well, somebody has to do this for them. Is there anybody else in New Zealand that's going out to protest public meetings, interviewing activists and getting this thing actually online so people can see it? No, there isn't. Is there even one? No, there isn't. Okay, well, when you have a realization, an important realization, that is when the impetus and the responsibility falls to you. Did somebody else have that realization? No. Is somebody else implementing your idea? No. Are you going to go to people and ask for help with it before even getting it off the ground or even starting on square one? No. No, you can't. Nobody else is going to do it. You have to do it yourself. You had the idea. You have the umbrage. It's pretty straight frickin' forward. On top of that, the thing that was really frustrating me is the lack of a sense of humor, okay? We're talking about extermination. We're talking about contamination. We're talking about pedophile rings and the worst topics of human history. Nobody is saying crappy jokes alongside telling you this. And so the mood becomes negative. It becomes hostile. It becomes fearful. It becomes paralyzing with its power. That is how bad the situation truly is. And I kind of am rebelling against the general mode of the truth movement in that sense, by injecting crappy jokes, by having a few laughs. I mean, just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't make it fun. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed?
You know, you do inject that humorous aspect to the conversation. And maybe that's what Dr. Hurley was referring to earlier. You know, she got doom overload. So without a little satirical dark humor. This would all be too dreadful. And Rosen, you were talking earlier about something Vinny just mentioned, that it's up to you, and no one is going to be able to help you but yourself. What makes you a renegade, Am?
Well, of course, I've never seen myself as a renegade or rebelling. I've been more of the exploring, experimenting, self-affirming, self-asserting. Just to share a little thing, at the beginning of my fourth year, in my first conflicting emotional encounter with my father, he brought me around. He was a wonderful man, and I made my first deal with him. He's the only man, the only person in this world at that time I had ever accepted as an authority figure over me. And the deal he made was that we would talk out everything till we both understood. If I was off, then I would have to make corrections. But that there would be honesty, openness, and we wouldn't stop until we were both satisfied that we understood. Then he took it a step further, which probably set the course of my life. He said, son, if you can make more sense than I can, if you can show how your way of looking at things makes more sense, even though I don't like it or approve of it, if you can show me where your thinking is better than mine, you can have your way. I said, no matter how old I am, he said, no matter how old you are. We honored that. But that took away any sense of anyone, I didn't care whether you had PhDs, credentials, robes of office or state, it didn't matter. I was never felt intimidated. As a matter of fact, it kind of turned around. I was going to look at you and see how much sense you were making, and that's been with me. And by the end of my fourth year, I had a profound experience that let me see into what you might call the heart of darkness. I didn't understand it at the time, but I was struck to the core of my being with what I saw as the darkness in the human psyche. Didn't know where it was coming from or how it operated. I saw that my beloved parents were afflicted by it. And then I became aware that everybody was operating under this thing. And I knew I was alone in the world with a monster that everybody was... and that started me on a course of looking to understand it. And I had to get the tools. I realized that I wasn't prepared. I didn't know what to do. By the time I was 11, after a few profound experiences, I made a commitment. A very revelatory epiphany centered experience in my life. I committed to understanding how consciousness processes through the human nervous system, why people have the problems they do, and how to resolve it. I consecrated my life to that. That gave me permission to go to places where most people get lost or derailed or driven insane and come back with the goods, because I was doing it in service to humanity. I never took authority figures seriously unless they could impress me with their sense of understanding, their sincerity, their knowledge, and I moved on, encountering a lot of them. But I never saw myself rebelling. I saw myself asserting and moving into new directions in behalf of humanity. So I don't know if I wouldn't call myself a renegade, but that's kind of been part of my trajectory, and it's led me down a lot of interesting pathways throughout my life.
Well, you stand out in a crowd and you make a difference, or try to make a difference, in your fellow human being's life. So that kind of makes you a renegade, although maybe is not a rebellious one, but that you step out of the box, I believe.
But I step out as a healer. You know, remember, this is my 39th year of practice, professional practice, integrating body and mind. People come to me from all ages, all walks of life, all classes and economic things, and I have to look and see what they need to make their lives work as far as they're ready to take it. And if they want more, there's always more. Most people just want to adapt and not feel bad, feel a little better, and I help them. So it's that energy in me has been put in service to people. So that's why I say, don't see myself as rebelling. I see myself as asserting. It's kind of when you go around a circle, you revolve. We go through the seasons of our life. But every time you go around, if you've learned a little more, even though you're going around again, your perspective on it is different. The way you interact with it, what you encounter becomes different. That's the evolutionary spiral that turns the redundancy of going round and round into an escalating, expanding format.
Speaking of being a healer, Dr. Lorraine Hurley was a guest of ours very early on, and she, at the time, was only a guest on radio shows. Now she has guests on her own radio show. She stepped up. She stepped out. She is a renegade. Tell us what makes you a renegade. What motivates you to do what you do? Because this is not an enriching process. Most of us don't get paid for any of this.
No, what motivates you to be a renegade? And I really want to acknowledge the people that are with us. Susan, sweetheart, if you think you're middle age at 37, I got to tell you, I'm 55. You haven't even begun your life.
Oh, no.
You have not.
Just a spring chicken.
Yeah. And Vinny, you know, there's something about you when you talk about your early experience, been there, done that. I guess what made me a renegade was being brought up. You know, in relation to Susan, I can tell you that I always felt that there was something out of place with me. And in relation to Vinny, I can always tell you that there were people that did not see me. In relation to my friend Am, I can tell you that my friend Am has credentials you guys don't even know about. For instance, he was given a doctorate simply because of what he self-studied. You know, I am a renegade. And what makes me a renegade is, I guess, my interest in people and my interest in life. And Matt, thank you. You know, you're so generous, because when I was participating in this, I was falling down the rabbit hole hard and fast. And the early part of my life has only come back to haunt me because I realized the emotional baggage and damage it's done. When I first became involved in activism work, I really thought I had arrived intellectually. I thought I was figuring stuff out. I was going to tell the world just what was going on. I left medicine. I was so bold that I could leave something that I had invested tons of money and time and energy into. And now where I sit today, and I hope I sit in a different place a few years from now, where I sit today is in a place of being able to acknowledge, to communicate, to identify with where everyone else is in life. That's, Susan, that's where 55 has gotten me. Sweetheart, you have no idea. 20 years from now, you're going to meet more people, you're going to do more things, and you're going to expand more upon your life. And Vinny, 20 years from now, the people that made fun of you, they're going to be your greatest teachers. And I hope I don't sound I hope I don't sound sophomoronic or something. This is where I am today in life. I was so concerned about the world that I fell into a deep, deep, dark depression, addiction. You want to know, Matt, why I haven't been on United? Want to know why I'm doing my own radio show today and I don't? Because of my fear. I had to take control. I had to take control. I had to develop a way in which I could talk about those things that soothed my own fear. I couldn't be a part. I dropped out of being a part of things because being a part of things just gave me access to all kinds of stories and all kinds of history and all kinds of things that I could not cope with. I could not cope with it. And, this has been kind of a story of my life. What makes me a renegade? I guess just the simple realization throughout my life that whatever people told me, if it did not resonate with me, I could not be a part of it. I could not join it. I could not be a part of it. You know, I wish I could tell you that I was bold and brave and that when I heard stories when I heard about things that I mounted a really brave response to it. For the most part, I didn't. I mounted a very fearful response to it. Today, I know that my fear has actually been a gift as long as I don't let it run me. and that my fear took me to the face of the beast. And the face of the beast, you know, we're talking about a lot of things in a lot of different ways. There's only one thing on earth. No, I'm not talking about in heaven. I'm talking about on earth that we have to worry about. And that's the bankers, the elites, and the psychopaths and parasitized individuals that are running the show. Now, Am and I have talked about this several times. He and I are good friends. He may not see it that way. I see it this way today. Yesterday, 5 years ago, it was the bought out presidents and congressmen of the United States, as though we have no nationality. What makes me a renegade? The fact that I just dig and dig and dig and dig. And if I'm uncomfortable, here's what I will say to the world. I still don't believe you. And until I believe you, I am going to keep going and going and going. And that's why I do radio today. I hope that answers the question. I just want to acknowledge the people that are here tonight. I you know, your stories, I got to tell you guys, There's a relationship to all of you. You are all brilliant, wonderful, beautiful people. I mean, Am knows I think that about him, but Susan, you and I have never met. Vinny, you did do a radio show. The fact you don't remember is fine. Matt, you know, when I was participating in United We Strike, Karen Tostado is still a dear, dear friend. I was focusing on things like geoengineering. I was focusing on what they were doing, and eventually I began to focus on them. Who are they? Who are they? Are they archons? Are they demons? They're certainly not human. They're psychopaths. At the very, very least, I will tell you they're psychopaths. And where I stand today is simply the realization that if the world's run by psychopaths, then there's only one hope for us, and that is spiritual. We focus on ourselves. We learn who and what we are. And we basically... There's no such thing as them for me anymore. It's about me. Whenever I perceive a threat, a danger, an anger, I have to look within and I have to just pull up whatever strength I can to help me live in the world without the burden of resentment. You know, they say resentment is like drinking poison and expecting someone else to die. Does that mean that I would not, I don't see what's, no. I see exactly what's going on, and but I have a whole different take on it, Matt, from where we were a few years ago. And my take on it, you know, when I was working with Clifford Carnicom and Moore Gellens and just completely fucking flipped out about, you know, terraforming and everything that was going on. And today what I just do is I sit back and I say, you know, the only thing that I can do is to help other people appreciate how beautiful, wonderful, awesome, and amazing. I don't deny the evil in the world, but I choose to affirm the beauty in the world. And everyone here, as far as I'm concerned right now, tonight is beautiful.
Well, we appreciate you joining us, and we believe that you're beautiful as well, and that you've evolved and gotten past your fears, and that you can help others heal past their fears. Because this fear mentality, this fear society that which we live in, I mean, we're taught from the very beginning of our lives to fear everything and everybody.
Exactly.
You got past that, so hopefully you now can help inspire others to overcome their fears, because that's what it takes to start making progress. I mean, if you cannot operate from a position of fear effectively, if you're controlled by it and be a renegade. Sky, you were mentioning this kind of in your introduction about how you became a renegade, but what you're our newest member here. You know, what makes you a renegade? Why do you want to be a part of this?
Well, I'm really honored to be here, and I think we're getting to the heart, to the real gem of the issue here. You know, I realized early on that something wasn't quite right, and I was rather idealistic in college. I wrote my own major called Global Environmental Education. I was ski racing and training with the U.S. ski team. I looked good on the outside, but on the inside, I was definitely suffering, and I was super sick for most of my life with asthma and lung infections and all my health issues. So, you know,
what happened to me is I definitely gained that compassion so I can relate to others who are suffering. And through what I ended up doing in college is I had one more year to go, but I dropped out of the system and came out here. My major was one of 20 of 30,000 students to actually get approved. And I just said, you know, it ended up having me out in Hawaii teaching Earth's Future Stewards, our youth, all about the interconnectedness of Earth's environmental systems out here in Hawaii, because we have every climate. And although that sounded like a great vision, I just said, you know, let's stop writing about it and doing the academia of it, and let's go live it. So I came out here, and having pioneering off-grid living, homesteading definitely is one way. I'm a renegade, as well as with my family, you know, my not vaccinating our child, having my wife just post something about vaccinations and all the heavy metals in there. And someone said, oh, you know, those heavy metals, the kind of mercury that's in there, it's actually not a bad mercury. Like, there's not a bad kind of mercury. And that was the whole point to the post was, hey, you know, this mercury, like, is a bad deal. And so, you know, I see that in my wife posting it. And I just like to say to the people out there who are have children, can someone put their phone on mute, because I'm hearing some background noise.
That's the good doctor.
There are ways. There are ways around it. You know, you can find ways around the vaccination.
And did you just get cut out there? Oh, Sky's just dropped off. That's unfortunate. I think
we just dropped his call. Sorry about that. Hey, Dr. Hurley, can you mute for a second while we try to get Sky back?
Can I mention something? Because there was an element that the doctor was mentioning before about how to making money, kind of thing. And it's like, when you go into a new industry, specifically like this one, where you can really only make money by doing the right thing, that seems to be the best way to get out of the initial system that we were all a part of, where you only make money by selling your labor, by basically pawning off deception, more or less. It's kind of like this this little slippery slope. Okay, I'm willing to follow that person's orders because they're giving me money. Okay, I'm willing to bend the truth on this point here because I'm making money off of it. And personally, I got really depressed, hyper depressed, off of all of this, and quit my job. Last month I got 4,000 cash plus $11,900 worth of shopping vouchers for a local mall chain. And so I had the confidence to quit because I had that kind of, you know, huge cash stockpile. I was able to get myself a Mac, get myself a camera, and then go out. However, the money ran out pretty quickly. And I was like, okay, well, that's pretty stressful and it's pretty depressing. I mean, if you ever want stress, if you ever want depression, do it without money. And then you'll find out how bad it can really be. And in New Zealand,
that would be a challenge.
Yeah, in New Zealand, we have this thing called a sickness benefit. So you can go into a doctor, and because depression is like such a common thing and requires zero evidence of any kind really to qualify that you're medically depressed, I went into this doctor and I said I was feeling really sad and I was feeling really difficult, and I was like, I really was, and I was literally on the verge of tears. But as soon as he signed off that little form that meant the government would give me $200 a week, without having to actually go out and work for it, and I could spend all my time going to protests, public meetings, etc., filming, editing, and helping the activists get their word out, it seemed to be tolerable to me. Okay, we've got Sky back. Sorry about that.
We got Sky back. Yeah, he's,
you know, my satellite must have dropped me off here, but it's definitely, it's really important to hold that balance, you know, as dark as things get. There's always going to be the solutions, and in fact, the worse things get, the better the solutions are. And so I feel like I'm here to help remove that fear. And it's definitely I'm a renegade through buying organic, non-GMO, harvesting what we can from the land, harvesting what we can from the ocean. I spearfish, and you can selectively harvest and receive the fish that are just the right without taking too much. And, you know, I think
you get
through
to
my
put
products,
what's on the menu.
you
get to pick the menu every night. Right?
Exactly. We got some amazing reef fish, and despite what people want to say about Fukushima and the ocean, we have some very clean, very amazing fish that I am able and fortunate to feed my family with out here, and they've been all tested clean of radiation and all that. But definitely I'm a renegade through the products and the awareness that I bring to people, because, you know, we have to be tricky in health and wellness, as you know. We are, and we're fighting for our right of truth in labeling, but we have to, right now the FDA is asking us to lie on our labels and say, and not tell what it does. And so, for example, we have a product, a nano cordyceps mushroom mycelium. It's a powdered product that increases ATP up to 30%. We've got the clinical data on all that. I take it for spearfishing because I feel like I've got an extra lung. I can free dive down over 100 feet. And it's so oxygenating. As you guys know, pathogens cannot exist in an oxygen-rich environment. So we can't come out and say, hey, you know, this stuff will kill the cancer. So we got a whole other site set up for how people's beloved pets, like their canine immunity is one of the products, how their cats and dogs are really responsive with their cancer to the cordyceps. And so we've got the Vitae Elixir, which is we just talked about it on the Color Cure, David Wolf's new book. We just interviewed him. And, you know, this stuff is some powerful herbs, graviola, bloodroot, stuff that really is kind of harsh to take by itself. But it's this clinical formula that allows you start taking it every day, about 10 drops. And it goes deep and actually starts killing the roots of the candida. And people have talked about all kinds of mystery ailments, from Lyme to psoriasis, kind of clearing up with this stuff, to empower people with things like the nano silver so that they don't have to live in fear that the common cold or staph is going to take them out, because people are dying all over the country in hospitals just from staph, let alone the MRSA antibiotic resistant staph. And so to be empowered by the nano silver gel and just put it on your cut out here in Hawaii, everyone gets staph from the ocean, from a little scrape on the reef. And, you know, I think that no fear is the aspect of a renegade. And I just really like to I like the humor solution. I think I can be a little serious, too serious sometimes. And I think my medicine is in the medicinal foods and cutting through the illusion that way and letting people know that there are real solutions out there, and we don't have to take what we're force-fed down, through the propaganda media system of you know, you got to take these drugs. I was told, if you don't take these drugs, you're going to always take these drugs the rest of your life. You're never going to get rid of asthma. And I looked the doctor in the eye, and I knew that wasn't true. And it took me years of throwing my inhaler off the top of mountaintops and trying to do it from a meditation level, knowing that there were secrets to unlock there. But until I felt good in my body, until I felt healthy enough to be able to feel balanced and to sit and to heal from those higher realms, it just wasn't working for me. So, you know, over at medicinal-foods.com, we've got some real solutions that really work. And some things that can get you feeling good, like the nutrient-dense chocolate is, people are chasing the sugar with these Hershey bars, and we have chocolate that has minerals in them. I'm getting some information out on the cavity healing protocol, because it's the same kind of treating the symptoms and not the disease itself with our dentistry. And I'm dropping some Weston Price on everybody and getting them to go back to those fat-soluble vitamins through fermented cod liver oil and bone broth soups, and realizing that it's not acid and bacteria that's giving our cavities, it's in fact a nutrient deficiency. And when we have the right nutrients, then our teeth are strong, and healthy teeth resist acid and bacteria. So there we go. I'm a renegade from just helping people see what these ancient cultures and indigenous people did to live in a state of balance and walk in peace on the earth.
Can I jump in for? Oh, sorry.
Wait. Well, I wanted to give my thoughts on that.
Sure.
So there's two themes that I hear from most everyone here is that they had to overcome fear, or fear has to be something that you can manage in order to be a renegade, and that we have a desire to help our fellow human being. You see, I've always been a rebel, a renegade. I've always questioned authority. I was kicked out of catechism for asking too many questions. I was reading Eric Van Doniken by the age of 9, Gods from Outer Space. He's the one that brought forth or made popular the idea that in our ancient past as humans, we have had interaction with extraterrestrials who have genetically modified indigenous species to create modern humans and intentionally interfered or interacted with mankind to steer the course of culture and history. So at age 9, I had moved well beyond the Bible and was reading in this stuff. So I've kind of grown up awake. I studied UFOs from that early age. I exhausted all the books in the school library, and I exhausted all the books in the public library in Hilo there. And, I could see all the lies and the manipulation of government through the story told of UFOs and our interaction with the aliens. I could see the lies. So when 911 came along, I was already awake. I was on the internet. Over 20 years ago, one of the first websites, a very large website, my competition was like the CNN's, MSNBC's, Fox News. There, I was like the Drudge Report of my time, a news aggregate, and I would write my own articles. And I was one of the first ones exposing the Bilderberg Group. I would take articles that Jim Guy Tucker would write in the Stars, what was this? American? The American paper out of the New American? No.
Anyway, it's called American Free Press.
American Free Press, right. I used to take his Bilderberg articles and post them on the internet, and those would be the only articles on the internet you could find about the Bilderberg Group. So I've been exposing this and been awake for a long time now. Why I do this? Why I'm a renegade? Because I don't want to say I have no fear. Because I guess that would be a lie. If I search within myself, yes, I do have fears, but I don't let them control my behavior. I'm fearless to the point where I'm not afraid that, look, I can go to sleep every night, and if they come to my house with a SWAT team and shoot me faster than I can shoot more of them, then fine, I've done my part. I can sleep well at night, say I've helped my fellow human being the best I know how, the best I can. And if I can inspire you to go help somebody else, bonus. I know the consequences of not doing anything. And the consequences is extermination. We're being exterminated like a house full of roaches. Put a sack over the house, pumping poisonous fumes, and then you wipe out the population of roaches. And then you re-inhabit the earth. That's what's happening now. And if we do nothing now, we do nothing as a species, we do nothing as a race, we do not combine our resources of resistance, of saying no and non-participation, then we have no future. And that's what motivates me once a month.
Yeah, I've got a number of things to add in here. I mean, first of all, I'm not without fear. If anything, I'm really terrified, and my fear is my tool. Why do I help people? It's because I'm really terrified of the consequences of what will happen if they're not helped, you know? And secondly, about helping others, is it a desire? No, it's mostly just an obligation. You know, I do it because I feel that I have to. And the last part of it is about the end of the world, right? A lot of people talk about this as the end of the world. You remember that 2012 phenomenon where everybody was freaking out about it and what have you? I got over fearing the end a while ago because I found out that stress causes illness, especially stress about the end of the world. So what's the point of stressing about the end of the world if the illnesses that are caused by your stress will kill you before the world ends?
Well, the world won't end if we do our job. Dr. Hurley, you were wanting to jump in?
Well, yeah, you know, Am wanted to jump in. I'd love to go after Am because I do want to...
Guys, thank you, Lorraine. Let me jump in because I have to leave. I've got another appointment. So let me say a few things. First of all, thank you all. Love what you're saying, and we could extend this a lot further. I would be lying to you if I said fear had any place in my life anymore. I've totally understood the mechanism and eliminated it. You know, whether we're talking about royalty and aristocracy or plutocracy, you know, moneyed, or the guy with the bigger muscles and the bigger cudgel, we're talking about ways of socially interacting. No matter what the system or what the ideal, it won't work any better than the quality of the intelligence. Not just the intellectual ability to retain information and try to do something with it, but the comprehensive understanding of how to look at all the elements involved in a situation and see what's the best way to balance and act upon them. In terms of that, yes, see, I see all of you, you see yourselves as renegades because you wouldn't buy into what you're being given, but I see the drive that all of you have been expressing, one of you saw something better and you it was like a faint, you know, that phantom carrot before the beast of burden, and you followed it. And in doing that, you kicked out the jams wherever you found them, because that call to greater fulfillment, greater expansiveness, greater awareness was really the driving force behind all this. I would like to say that the people that are governing, who are running these corporations, everything, they're very compromised. They're obviously intelligent in some levels, intellectually developed, disciplined, but they're compromised. They have a lot of power, and they're looking for shortcuts. And all of this is understandable and explainable once you understand consciousness. I'd like to say, hey, boys, you kids at the top, I don't want to take away what you have, but I'd like to make you a little more balanced so you can use it and be of your own growth and everybody else's in a more constructive way. And I pretty much can show you how to do that. But, more I'd love to say, but I want to thank you all for giving me a chance to participate. I wish I could stay longer, but I do have to leave. But wish you all the best and look forward to the next our next get-together.
Thanks a lot for your continued participation and wisdom shared with us and our audience here, Am Rosen. How do we get your where's your website? How do we get your
information? Oh, yes. You can see some of what I'm up to if you go to LifeGame, LifeGame, LifeGame.com. Love questions, anything that concerns you. I'd love to hear from you, and wish you all the best.
Well, thanks for joining us this evening. Dr. Hurley, you were wanting to make a comment.
I was. Okay, I'm just, you know, a couple of things came up. We had this gentleman, Tom, that was talking about, Beauchamp and Pasteur. Are you guys familiar with that story?
No.
No. Okay. Louis Pasteur, the germ theory of disease. Louis Pasteur discovered that there was a germ that created disease, and therefore there was an antibiotic, or there was something outside of the normal human immune system that would cure it. Beauchamp said there can be no disease within an environment that does not invite it. So Beauchamp said that the environment basically created the disease. And what he meant by that was that have you heard of dark field? I don't know how many people we still have with us. Have you heard of dark field?
Yes, like bioterrain, dark field microscopy.
Thank you, Tom. So you're promoting, and you know what? These products are excellent. We should definitely have these products. And why do we need them? Because most of us do not have the bioterrain to actually promote the exquisite beauty and perfection of our immune systems. That's it. That's So let's take this out of the realm of the physical body. If you accept what I'm, is there anyone who really rejects what I'm saying?
No, and I think that anybody who does reject it should be put out to pasture.
No, okay. Thank you, Vinny. I'm just asking. Because you guys can look this up. Look up Beauchamp, look up Pasteur, look up the germ theory of disease, look up the bioterrain, you know, theory of disease. And what we don't understand is that we have been so far removed from nature. Like, agriculture began, 5,000-6,000 years ago to basically dumb us down. The compromise to the human body began a long, long time ago. We're kind of focusing on how does the compromise manifest today in terms of fighting the AMA and the pharmaceutical industry. What I'm trying to do is draw a correlation between the bioterrain theory of disease and the mechanism of disease and the bioterrain theory of awakening, all right? Because when Matt talks about renegades, what he's really asking is, are there those of us in the world that actually see a different world, right, Matt? Am I wrong?
Exactly. We see something different than our neighbors, so we step outside of the box and try to teach our neighbor what that
right, we're renegades external, because we see and we feel and we live differently. And there's a correlation that can be drawn between, as a physician, I can tell you there's a correlation that can be drawn between, from the physical. And as a seeker, and that's all I am, is a seeker. I have no credentials beyond my medical degree. Other than, you know, I did get certifications. I do have other credentials if people need them. I can put them out there. It's my goal today, like all of you, is to help humanity to comprehend that everything we've been taught about ourselves is a lie. We've been brainwashed into believing we are compromised. We are not compromised until we actually take possession of our full abilities. We do need what Tom is promoting. We do need people like Vinny to go out there and...
You mean Sky. It's Sky. Tom? Sky Cubby, not Tom.
Oh, I'm sorry?
Yeah, his name is Sky.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
By the way, I've never met a heterosexual man named Sky Cubby, but yeah.
Yeah, you know, my apologies. I was the one running the water in the background, so that's probably why you missed something. Here's the point I'm trying to make. I don't want to go on and on and on. Every person here tonight probably doesn't even appreciate how brilliant you are. Because from my point of view, listening, my heart, I'm feeling really happy that I'm here tonight. And why am I feeling really happy? Not because you agree with me, not because you know what I know, not because I know what you know. I'm agreeing because I'm seeing that people are kind of coming together. They're figuring it the fuck out. And
please watch that language. We want to keep this family friendly.
Oh, sorry. I'm so sorry.
Exactly. You don't want to offend the children while you're telling them that they're being exterminated by ruthless criminal sociopaths.
I know. No. You know what?
This might be too much.
There's really no excuse for that kind of language. I'm learning to get over it. The point I'm trying to make is, if you look at the theories of Pasteur and Beauchamp, Pasteur said that there was something outside of us that could infect us and harm us. And Beauchamp said, nothing can harm us when what is within us is perfected and healthy. It goes this way across the physical, mental, psychic, psychological, and spiritual parameters of our existence. This is, just take it down to the physical where we can all get verification for it. We can all read about it. We can all study it and begin to just let yourself move that way throughout whatever aspect of your life you're trying to do. Right now, what I personally feel like we're dealing with is really, for me, psychic trauma. When I fell down the rabbit hole, psychically traumatized. And I pulled out everything that I thought I had of any power within me. My voice, my mouth, my language, my education. I got completely flipped. I flipped out when I fell down the rabbit hole. And it did not do me or anyone any good. It did nothing. It did none of us any good. And I'm not suggesting we don't talk about it. I'm suggesting what we all need to do is get to that place where Beauchamp says, you know, nothing can harm us unless we create the environment that allows it to harm us.
Can I say something, and Dr. Hurley? Sorry. Finish. I'm sorry.
No. Go ahead.
Well, it's just yesterday or the day before, I was thinking about my anger, my rage, and there's a lot of it. Like, you wouldn't believe how much unhappiness is just beneath here, this voice that I have. And I have learned to control it over time, right? Like, I always had a bad temper, and I only just realized that the day before yesterday that I can never use my temper and get a positive outcome out of it. Like, if I'm angry with somebody because of their incompetence, and I choose to lose my temper, like, now I don't just lose my temper, I choose to lose it. It never actually benefits the situation at all. It never does. Right. Like,
Vinny,
why?
They say that resentment, bitterness, think of any negative emotion, is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. The only control we have is our response to the environment. And what the world really needs right now, and this is something that I've been criticized so much for lately, because I have really pedaled back from the kind of rah-rah, siskoomba activism that I was involved in, is really saying to people, if you want the world to change, change yourself. Vinny, I'm sorry. Do you know John Lash? Do you guys know John Lash?
Yeah. I've had him on my show a couple times.
Do you know that he just came out with the Kalika War Party? If you haven't seen that website, go to it. Kalika War Party. Here is a man who has been given a tremendous gift, the ability to interpret the Nag Hammadi, however fractionated those esoteric and ancient and sacred texts are. And here's his response after, I don't know, 15, 20 years of trying to change the world through education. He's flipped and he's calling for war. He has something called the Kalika War Party. Now, I don't judge it. I look and I say, I understand it. I understand it. But at some point, at some level, what I say to myself is, the man never dealt with, like, Vinny, at least you're willing to say, I'm angry, I'm fearful. I'm, you know, we call it doom fatigue in my camp. We have a word for it. I've got friends that simply say to me, you've got doom fatigue, give it up. Just stop. Go, you know, just stop.
Dr. Hurley, this is Sky, and I think your voice is just such a breath of fresh air and totally needed in this truth movement, because people have to hold down the frequency of, you know, enjoying life and appreciating all the blessings we have, as well, people within the movement, as well as those who are sharing and digging up all this information. I mean, it can really get to you, and the bottom line is that frequency needs to be held on Earth of love. And, you know, it's just not happening if you're completely focused on all the negative things going on. So although it has its place, I've learned from my wife that as I bring to her one, you know, bad news after another of, you know, from the fallen reptilian agenda to the latest in GMOs, you know, it's like at some point she's just like, I really don't want to hear about it. And she honors certain things and gets information out, like with vaccines. But I've really learned a lot from her when it comes to where our thoughts are at. And the frequency that we're putting out, because the bottom line is these diabolical entities that receive energy off of people being in fear. You know, the Matrix analogy isn't too far off as far as giving energy to, it's kind of like hierarchies of any realm, they all feed energy up to further on up the hierarchy. So if this fear and anger and all this energy ceases to exist, the entities that live off of that will cease to exist. So there's a whole lot on the line when you take it to the entities that control the ruling elite. And when it gets to that point, there really is a lot on the line. And a lot of people say we're moving through the photon belt and we're coming into the next yuga. Well, there's so much at stake right now that I really love your macrocosmic analogy of the inner ecosystem, because there's so much at stake when it comes to where our thoughts are at and the energy we're putting out. But you know, I used to do dark field microscopy. I did it with Patrick Flanagan and a product we make available, the Mega Hydrate, and we show how people's blood is moving like ketchup. You know, it looks like these little. We did an infomercial down in Vegas, I don't know, 15 years ago, and it shows your blood cells all stuck together, barely moving along. And then we take the Mega Hydrate, which is pure hydrogen that he formulated, microclustered into at the nano level, and it ends up 20 minutes later, it's moving like wine. And so the thing about the inner ecosystem, that bioterrain being alkaline and also having the culture, you know, at the base of all great cultures were all the cultures, the sauerkrauts and the kefirs, and having that inner ecosystem filled with a wide range of healthy gut flora.
Uh-oh, looks like we lost Sky again, and he was on a roll too again, but...
I jump in here? Because something I was wanting to say while he was speaking is that you're right about the fear and the anger and how they're not good, which is why I've got so much of them, but they generally don't come across during my radio broadcasts, because my philosophy is for everything that's bad within you, you need to artificially create, if necessary, an ironic juxtaposition to that. So I'm really angry and really afraid, so naturally the thing that I create in terms of radio shows and conversations and relationships with people is about fun and laughter and not being afraid of things anymore. I mean, more specifically, don't be afraid of the things that aren't right in front of you, right? Like my my bandmate, Mikhail, he found out about the reptilians for the first time, and he started freaking out. He's like, oh my God, there's these reptile creatures, they're dominating us and all of that kind of thing. Believe what you will, just think about it as a hypothetically. Hypothetically, there's ruthless, you know, reptile creatures that control things, right? Can I finish? And sure. I said to him, look, let me ask you a few questions. Number one, have you ever seen one? No. Do you think you're ever actually going to see one in the flesh? No. So, let me get this straight. You're freaking out and you're terribly afraid of something you've never seen and you know we'll probably never see. And he's like, oh, okay. Suddenly he wasn't afraid or even really concerned about it at all.
Go ahead, Dr. Hurley.
Oh, no. I was just going to say... the elimination of fear doesn't basically, here's the real challenge of eliminating fear is that we don't stop looking for the truth. Thank you, Vinny. That's, you know, your friend who was looking for the reptilians, good for him. Because the fear that he experienced was on the path to truth. That's all I was trying to say, is that there is a certain kind of fear that is legitimate. We are going to experience fear on the path to truth, because we have to, it's going to be new. It's going to be different. It's going to be, it's going to rock our world. So I'm not suggesting that we never be afraid.
Yeah.
I dropped off there.
I wanted to make a comment of what Dr. Hurley was saying. And because you had commented on it, Sky, is that, we have to heal ourselves and resist this new old odor from an entire being perspective, our spiritual, our psychological, and our physical. But I think the basic building block of that is to clean ourselves, detoxify ourselves, so that we can think more clearly, and those other elements will follow. You know, you can't think clearly if you've got fluoridated water. You can't think clearly if you're taking vaccinations. You can't think clearly if you're eating genetic modified food. You can't think clearly if you're taking aspartame, MSG, and high fructose corn syrup because it has high levels of mercury. You get that out of your life, you can start to think more clearly. And I think the spiritual and the psychological awareness will then come out of that stupor, and hopefully people will tune into programs like this and programs like Dr. Hurley's, where she takes a more holistic approach, looking at how to heal ourselves and walk outside of that fear. Yes, we have to deal with that fear, but we have to learn to walk outside of it and not let it control us. Because, yes, aliens and reptilians are scary, but that doesn't make them go away.
I was naturally thinking about how
will come.
There's been a manipulation lately by I don't know if it's a religious movement or a spiritual movement or whatever, but its basic belief structure seems to be never complain, never fight back, ignore the suffering and pain of others, be selfish and ignorant, and everything will be fine. And
Vinny, that's mechanized intelligence. They've actually traced that to computerized, mechanized. Do you know that those things are being put out? These aren't channeled teachings. We're really being we're seeing a new thing come into our lives. It's called mechanized intelligence. Computers basically ascertain from all their data collection, they're ascertaining our psychological vulnerabilities. And these Seleucia Galactic Federation, I'm sorry, I can't think of all the names. Vinny, you're right on it. What they're doing is they're actually looking for ways to sedate the awakening of humanity. I'm sorry, I had to throw that in there. I just came across this yesterday. I was going to say the day before. It was actually yesterday.
It's not growth if you're not in pain at some point. Like it, or at least this is how I've figured things out, is that the more pain an experience causes you, the more lessons, more specifically important lessons, you are now capable of drawing from those experiences. I mean, it's like pleasure and ecstasy and fun, they're all good, but they don't have any meaning unless it's juxtaposed to pain and fear and emotions. In my opinion, all emotions exist for a reason. And if you elect to ignore emotions you don't like, you are electing to remain ignorant of lessons that you can learn.
Right, so these programs are coming out in opposition to what, when I dropped off, I was talking about the regenerative model that you were proposing there, where in nature you've got an abundance of resources, and they're continually creating new species and new nutrients and organizations and stuff like that. And so as I went out there to save the world, I had to really turn all that back on myself, heal myself, be in balance with my thoughts and actions myself. And then that is naturally, you know, coming out. But as from a macrocosmic standpoint, if we can get it together and provide this framework for others, as well as for us to have our resources shared and our thoughts at the level where we are holding it together in our mind, then those programs really can't touch us. So I think that's I was really liking that analogy. And you know, it's crazy the kind of programs that are out there pulling for control over us, and we've got to keep it real and be able to dig deep into what we know is our path and our truth, and keep sharing that with others, and keep a light heart through it all.
Yeah. Like I say, emotions are there for a reason. Don't ignore them. Just find the reason. Seems pretty straightforward.
Yeah, go through them.
I mean, well, like, folks, has anybody here ever done Oh, you know what? Actually, I'm going to shut up. Go for your life, man.
Well, you know, we've had a great discussion, but we've gone 90 minutes now, and I'd like to have everyone, you know, settle in for the evening. So what I want to do at this point, and this has been a great discussion, because I hear a lot of solutions, and we come back to a solution, I guess a theme, that one, we have to get beyond our fear, and two, if we can heal ourselves with our foods as medicines and detoxify or clean ourselves, then we can start to heal our entire being. We are spiritual beings inhabiting a three-dimensional world versus the other way around. And so let's go back around the table and get everyone's closing thoughts. And please promote your websites and information so we can get that spurred about to other folks. And we look forward to having you next month. Suzanne Polzo, you've been a little quiet this evening. Your closing thoughts. Oh, well, it looks like we might have lost Suzanne. Is she not there? Okay.
I know, I'm here.
Hard to find that mute button.
I muted myself out.
She's lost in the dimensional drift, man.
Yeah, she was just so, just so enthralled by the conversation, she forgot where the mute button was.
I did. I just enjoy listening to everyone's perspective. You get to know people by letting them talk, not by interrupting. So it's a pleasure and it's an honor to get to know all of you by the things that you've shared and the perspectives that you have. And it's just amazing to me where we've come from and where we are. And it makes me curious. You know, I'm glad that I live at this time in history. I think we're on the precipice of major shift in ideology, culturally, definitely the technological advancements are causing us to have conversations about things that we may have held dear, like Linus's blanket, you know, centuries ago, but maybe we could brush them aside. It's created upheaval, it's created a lot of fear, and it's created, I think, a lot of questioning of the each individual's personal paradigm. And I say maybe more so than any other time, but that's because I'm alive today. If I was alive 200 years ago, I might be singing a different song. But it's fascinating to listen to where people are, where they came from, and why they think the way that they do, and how they view the world, and how that view affects how their actions and their reactions to everything around them. So thank you very much, everyone. I know that it's been a long roundtable, but it's been fascinating, and I'm very glad that I could listen in. I feel like I'm spying in on you like the NSA, just listening to you guys talk. No, I'm joking.
How do we get your information? How do we listen to your new radio show?
Well, details will be coming soon. American Freedom Radio is coming back, and thank God, because I would not be on any other radio station. Danny is an amazing person. He has been an influence and created a lot of the people that we know and love and or don't love today. And it's an honor to be his friend, and it's an honor to be on his station. So I will be putting stuff on social media as details come. But I'm very excited. My radio show will be Hardline, is coming back to life 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on American Freedom Radio. For now, I am guesting on many other shows and co-hosting on many other shows, which I post on social media, on Facebook, on Twitter, on Google+. So go find me, worldtruth.org, informplanet, sue.co. If you want to contact me directly, occupycorporatism@gmail.com. And if you would like to read some fact-based evidence news, go to occupycorporatism.com. And again, thank you so much. It's always an honor. Thank you.
We appreciate the time, and we're honored by your presence, your intelligence, and your well-spokenness. We look forward to having you on every month, Suzanne. It's fun having you. Vinny Eastwood, your closing thoughts, and how do we get to your information?
Well, I would say that Suzanne's right. You learn a lot more about people by listening to them rather than interrupt them, which is why I've taken advantage of the situation and interrupted and pontificated as often as possible. Now, I think
not that noticed. No, that didn't happen at all, Vinny.
Hey, well, you know, you can't take yourself too seriously, can you? There's not a whole lot of benefits in that. In fact, that'd probably be my final word on this as well, is getting into this movement, you will be tempted to think that you're better than other people. You will be tempted to think that you're smarter or better in some way. And ultimately, you need to remember that you are human. You are flawed. You can be wrong. You can be misinformed. And you must be prepared to be polite, be astute, and have integrity if you want to have longevity. And that stems from having honesty, being able to entertain ideas that you don't believe, and being able to accept truths that you don't want to accept because they are the truth. And to deny reality is not a winning formula. Been a lot of people who've been denying it for a long time, and most of them are either dead or sick or having some kind of intellectual breakdown as we speak. So, I'm Vinny Eastwood. My show is The Vinny Eastwood Show, The Lighter Side of Genocide, at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question, and Eastwood as in go ahead, make my news. I'm completely listener-supported. I have the most YouTube subscribers out of any news channel in New Zealand, even more than all of the mainstream media virtually combined by myself, because basically people are hungering for the truth now. And the way I survive is via donations, not because I'm about to do something that you're paying me to do, but because I've already done something that nobody else will do, and you want to see that keep happening. So if you want to support me, go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com today and either donate through PayPal, or if you happen to be a New Zealander, the Kiwi Bank account there. And I very much appreciate it, because I'm trying to raise $6,000 for a new computer so I can make my very first documentary with all these amazing people that I've interviewed over the years.
You know, I hope you're not around 10 years from now, Vinny. I hope I'm not around 10 years from now. I hope that we don't have to do this 10 years from now, because we would have won. But 10 years from now, I can see you having produced multiple documentaries and have a really seasoned news enterprise, probably employing or incorporating multiple people to get the word out. You know, like I keep comparing you, but I say you're the Alex Jones of the Southern Hemisphere, and I do appreciate what you do, and I do appreciate your input here tonight, and as always on the UnitedWeStrike.com marathons, because this is a global effort. We have people from around the world joining us on this effort, you know, and your perspective from another hemisphere and another Commonwealth-controlled company, a country by the British Crown, I think gives us some very interesting perspectives. As always, we appreciate your time, Vinny. Let's see, Dr. Lorraine Hurley, your closing thoughts. How do we listen to your show?
On Common Awareness on GCN Live, and we are moving into podcasts and independence from GCN months and months down the road. Didn't know what I was getting into with radio. Have figured it out and have found a passion to not just share my learning and views on the world, but to bring extraordinary people onto the show that share their views. I learned so much from the people that I'm able to invite to the program. So communication has turned out to be my my muse. And on Common Awareness on GCN Live, that's it, that's me. My website is drhurley.net. You can sign up for a newsletter. It's not as frequent as I would like right now. Working on that. Working on how to really communicate. You know, there's a lot of people out there, a lot of people with, like Vinny, or like Susan, or like you, Matt. Just, there's the idea is not to be just one more talking head. The idea is to be someone who talks and allows people to open their head to, you know, to just basically run with the information in whatever direction they choose. That's pretty much where I'm at right now. How do I say this? My particular view on the world right now is that there is only one solution, and it's spiritual. It doesn't mean that I don't appreciate participating in other solutions. We have a project called Alignment of Hearts, a global synchronization project, which we're calling people to 1 hour a week, 1 hour a week, no matter where you are on the globe, to kind of get together and get into, we talked about releasing fear and getting into that place where you are thinking of the highest and greatest joy of your lives. And people, see, here's what we have over the quote power structure. We have imagination, we have compassion, and we have love. And believe me when I tell you that I'm not sure how this is going to work, only that I know from the science of it and from personal experience that it does work. I don't know what the world's going to be like 10 years from now, 5 years from now, 2 years from now. I just know that I want to contribute to a world that is far better 2, 5, 10 years from now than the world that is today. And I think that we do that through our innate and wonderfully unique human capability of compassion and love. The people that control the world are soulless. And that's a personal belief. They are soulless. So
how could you have souls to do the things they do? We appreciate your participation tonight, Dr. Hurley. It's a wonderful gift that you would share your time with us. You know, it's been a long time. How do we listen to your web show? How do we listen to your show?
Uncommon Awareness. It's Monday through Friday, 5 to 7 Eastern. You can pick up podcast archives. GCN runs a lot of commercials. It's unfortunate. They make me sign a non-compete clause where I can't edit out the commercials and put them on YouTube, which is why I'm working towards my own individual podcast. But it's just GCN Live, Uncommon Awareness. That's the name of the show. We do, you know, what a lot of people think is fluff. We're really moving into some hard stuff, though, some material that really brings up, you know, the Anunnaki, ancient archaeology. We're starting to bring in that kind of stuff. Why I hesitated was simply because I had to learn something about it before I could present it. You know, I'm a healer. And we do a lot of shows on healing, particularly focusing on sound and energy healing right now. Not even herbs are beautiful, but we're even moving beyond that. We're moving towards the primordial elements of life and just really encouraging people to ozone, orgone, sound, mantras, singing. It's the research in terms of how this actually...
you're putting together the puzzle.
We are. Yeah. Thank you. Whoever said that. I'm not sure who said that.
You're putting together the puzzle. Okay. Well, you know, I hope one folks last tune thing, into Matt, your show. Yeah, go ahead.
We all seem that we want to change the world, and I know that none of us will. But I do also know that because we're trying, the world will be saved because we're playing our part.
Thank you, Benny. Yeah, that's exactly it.
I told Karen Tostado at the very beginning of this whole thing. She said I was the first one to get a hold of her at the beginning of the back then was a tax-free 15 strike, right, that we did. And so – I told her at the very beginning, hold on to your seat. This is going to be a roller coaster ride. We'll have a front row seat on being able to witness the change in human history. Sky, you're the newest one to this group. Your closing thoughts, and we appreciate you joining us and this family. Do you see what you've gotten yourself into?
Oh, my God. I'm totally honored to be in the midst of all of you, and I feel like even though I've got the medicinal foods, you guys are such – medicine for me, and it's really, really incredible reflections to witness. And yeah, we've got front row seats to the greatest story ever told, and it really is the best of times and the worst of times. And so, you know, I like the quote: "One journeys, one sees, one descends, one sees no longer." But there's an art of conducting oneself in the lower regions with the memory of what one saw higher up. I think it was St. Augustine. And so I think that sums up where we have to bring it down to, like you said, Dr. Hurley, you know, to be able to get the message out so that people will run with it and do it in a way that it's received, and to be able to meet someone at that, at their level. And so I do it through chocolate. And you can get my book, The Raw Chocolate Diet, over there at medicinal-foods.com. And it's all about eating chocolate responsibly, what kind of chocolate, why raw, and like I said earlier, about cleansing virtually every organ in your body, and just a whole lot of different healthy living tips and guidelines. So we do cacao ceremonies, and it's a beautiful journey with this plant spirit, where it's it will meet you at whatever level you're willing to connect with. And some people have really powerful experiences. They say the cacao plant comes to the earth when the earth is in need of healing, and it's been anthropomorphized like the ulu and taro out here in Hawaii, as part of the family. But even more so, the ancient gods and goddesses of the Maya and Aztec, they believe we came from cacao, and it depicts them with cacao pods growing out of their heads, all the different gods. And it's a little different than, you know, the reptilian overlord genetic splicing kind of ideas, but they believe we tried they tried dirt and sand and rocks and sticks, and nothing works. So that we actually came from the cacao. And so it is very healing. It's very healing for the heart, literally expanding blood vessels up to, you know, 20%. So the thing is that it's like this cacao spirit stands at the gateway to the rest of the product line. And I just feel like it's something that people can really, that's exciting, that people can relate to. And as they learn more and heal more and be more in balance, then absolutely we can take it to higher levels of healing. And, you know, the mind is at a higher dimension than the rest of the physical and emotional. And so we have that control through our thoughts to really be able to have mastery over the physical and emotional things going on. So I'm just, you know, working towards that. And again, thank you so much for all your wisdom. And thanks, Matt, for bringing me into the family here. I'm totally honored and blown away that I'm on air with you amazing people. Mahalo.
Well, you know, I have a hard time believing I'm a cousin to Reese's Peanut Butter Cup somehow. But
in fact, I heard a story about the creation of that. Somebody dissected a monkey, and they had all these pieces out of there, and they're like, hey, why don't we cover them in chocolate butter and chocolate and peanut butter? We can call them Reese's Pieces.
Oh, fitting!
I saw where that was going.
Well, folks, you know, I'm very humbled to be a part of this all. I helped put this on. I sponsored this because people like you are making a difference in the world. When the history books recount the resistance against the New World Order, each and every one of you will have your own chapter. And, you know, if we conduct ourselves in the most moral fashion that we can, as we do here, and we pay our respects to our individual hosts, we may not agree 100% with what the other person is saying, but we're in the boat rowing in the same direction, and I think that's a good thing, that we as a human species can recognize that we need to row in that same non-compliance direction, that peaceful resistance direction, I think we win as a species because we're out of time. The time is now. If not us, who? If not now, when? So I feel humble that I get to share some time with you all every month, and I look forward to this because it is always inspiring to me. And so at the close of the show, stay tuned, folks. I want to play a few songs for you that I think will help inspire you, or I hope will help inspire you. But, you know, it's always a pleasure to spend our time with you. So until next month, folks, join us again for another great show. We always have so much information, and the spirit and the love here that you can feel, it's there, it's palpable. I hope carries on to your life, and I hope it helps inspire you to teach somebody else. As our good friend Larry Pinkney says, each one reach one, each one teach one. Until next month, folks, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Death to the new world odor.
Right, thank you, folks.